Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
SMILE is an acronym for the five qualities that make a name great. The S in SMILE stands for suggestive, and you want your name to suggest a positive brand experience. The M in SMILE stands for memorable. Metaphorical names are very memorable. The I in SMILE stands for imagery. You want your name to create a visual picture in someone's head. It's much easier for people to remember images than it is to remember words or letters, especially if they're not familiar. The L in SMILE stands for legs. Legs means that your name lends itself to wordplay so you can extend the brand. An example that I like is my own business name, Eat My Words. We've extended the brand. We have a menu of services. We have our blog called The Kitchen Sink. We have a package called The Whole Enchilada and one called Supermarket Special. And the E in SMILE stands for emotional connection. It's really important that your name resonates with your target audience. Otherwise, it's going to go right over their head. But you have to have a name that people get and connect with.
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from San Diego in California, USA, of course, Alexandra Watkins, who's the founder of Eat My Words Brand Naming Consultancy. So, Alexandra, welcome to the podcast. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, thank you, Jürgen. It's a privilege to be here.
And Vlad Solovetsky, who... he introduced us and suggested we have a conversation. So a big shout out to Vlad.
Yeah, Vlad's awesome. I just talked to him 2 days ago. We had a big
All right. Yes, so I must catch up with him again and see if we can actually bring him on for a conversation.
Oh, that guy, I could talk to that guy. He's the type of guy I could sit next to on a plane for 15 hours and just love that opportunity.
Yeah. Now, you specialize in creating brand names that make people smile instead of scratch their head, which is kind of a hint at the acronym you use in your book, Hello, My Name is Awesome, which is something we'll refer to later on. And you've done over 100 podcasts as a guest talking about brands and brand naming. So I'm really looking forward to digging into your expertise on that and having a lot of fun, because I know you're into making this whole exercise of naming things fun and meaningful at the same time. Before we do all that, though, Alexandra, what's the impact you're hoping to make in the world?
Well, I want to rid the world of kind of uninspired names and encourage people to try a little harder, give them some tips on how to make it easier. So many people tell me, oh, it's so hard. It doesn't have to be hard. In fact, it can be fun. So yeah, I want to help people and I want people to be in love with the name that they have. Like if you're naming a business and it's going to last a long time, you should love your name.
Yes, that makes it a lot easier, doesn't it? And there's so many tips, and I'm probably guilty of several of these as well. So many things not to do that you describe in your book. One of the things I think I'm guilty of is having to spell the name all the time. Now, I'm used to this because my actual personal name, Jürgen and Strauss, I'm having to spell for everybody. And I've always had to do that ever since I was a child, because in the English-speaking world, nobody knows how to spell it. So it didn't dawn on me that maybe having to spell a name is actually not a real good idea.
Well, yeah, I tell people, when you are naming your company or, you know, any part of your business, think about your own personal name. And if people have spelled it wrong or pronounced it wrong, or that they've just kind of had a blank stare look on their face, why would you want your own brand name to have the same problem? So I'm just trying to help people avoid that pain.
Yeah. All right. Now, I did mention the idea of Smile and Scratch, which you kind of use as the foundation for the acronym that you work through, the process that you use. So tell us a little bit more about that. And obviously, you know, it's great because it says you want the name to make you smile and you don't want it to make you scratch your head. But at the same time, those words actually mean a lot more, right?
They do. So SMILE is an acronym for the 5 qualities that make a name great. And SCRATCH is the flip side. And those are all of the things that you don't want your name to have. And those are the 7 deadly deal breakers. So would you like to go through SMILE?
Let's go through SMILE.
Okay. So this is the good one. Okay. So the S in SMILE stands for suggestive. And you want your name to suggest a positive brand experience. So something good about what your brand is or does. So for instance, with Amazon, who we all know, Amazon is suggestive of something very, very large. And that's what Jeff Bezos was going for when he named the company. So that's a suggestive name. The M in SMILE stands for memorable. Well, what makes something memorable? Well, there's actually studies done on this. And what makes something easy to remember is if it already exists in our knowledge base. So for instance, like Amazon is a good example. We know of the Amazon. We've heard of the Peruvian Amazon, the Brazilian Amazon, Amazonian women. We know it means something large. So that's suggestive. Metaphorical names are very memorable. Metaphorical names are very memorable because we already know these things. Another one, there's a bike lock company here in the States named Kryptonite. And we all know Kryptonite from Superman. Kryptonite repels bike thieves because just like Kryptonite repels Superman. So that's the analogy that they're trying to make. So that's M. And the I in SMILE stands for imagery. You want your name to create a visual picture in someone's head. It's much easier for people to remember images than it is to remember words or letters, especially if they're not familiar. So a name with imagery, I mean, just when I say Kryptonite, right, just to go back to that one, or Amazon, those have a lot of imagery to them. So if you can, so because a lot of times people will come in contact with our brand, but they might not need it right away, right? So you might tell me about a new energy drink that you're enjoying, but I might not be at the store or in need of an energy drink for a month. I'll be at the store before a month, but I might not want an energy drink right away. So then when I am at the store and I'm like, oh, what was the name of that energy drink that Jürgen told me he thought was so delicious and gave him a lot of energy? So imagine that you're trying to remember something. We close our eyes, right? We're like, oh, what was that name? And that's us searching our brain's dusty filing cabinet, right? So we're trying to remember. But if we have an image in our head, we can glom onto that image, right? Because it paints, right? Like a picture says 1,000 words. It's the same thing with a name. A name is 1, 2, 3 words at the most. But an image, it does say 1,000 words. So if somebody can visualize your name when they hear it or see it, you're golden. And the L in SMILE stands for legs. Legs means that your name lends itself to wordplay. so you can extend the brand. An example that I like is my own business name, Eat My Words. So how I've extended the brand is we have a menu of services. We have, our blog is called The Kitchen Sink. We have a package called The Whole Enchilada and one called Supermarket Special. In the office, I don't know if anyone's watching instead of listening, over here is my pink refrigerator. So that's another part of Eat My Words, is the pink fridge. That's where I keep my cool books. My business card is the little pink fridge. So yeah, we have a lot of fun. So the name Eat My Words lends itself to tons of wordplay and just the theme of food and beverage, which is really fun for a lot of people. And the thing about a name with legs is people like to have fun with the name. So they want to come to you. They want to suggest ideas to you. They want to play along. So that's what you get.
And it also creates a lot of triggers, right? That sort of trigger recollection of the actual name. So if people see a pink fridge, they, Eat My Words.
Yeah, exactly. And then the E in SMILE stands for emotional connection. It's really important that your name resonates with your target audience. Otherwise, it's going to go right over their head. So you have to have a name that people get and connect with.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, the connection. I'm curious, and I know you spoke about this in the book, the idea of trends in naming, and the idea right now, one of the things with all this artificial intelligence things is to use the .io extension and to have words that end with .io and use that extension. Or I've seen other ones. I saw one recently, which I can't recall what it was now, which probably says a lot because it's not memorable. But they used a full word extension as sort of an unusual extension, which was part of the brand name.
Yeah, I've seen those full word ones like .studio or I think .design, they're .beer. Those aren't as popular. And I will tell you, I know this from experience, that if you do have, so let's say you were, if we were eatmywords.io, if I told that to someone, they would say .io.com, right?
.com, yeah.
They don't get it. And same with the .beer and all of those. Because I know, because I talk to people that have those. And I say, does this happen to you? Yes. Like I can usually always predict the experience someone's having with their name. So yeah, and I would say with like the dot, here's the problem with .io as well, is I was at TechCrunch one time in San Francisco and I saw a company and it was card.io. And I didn't know if it was pronounced card.io, card, with the .io being silent, or if it was pronounced cardio.
Yeah.
Right? So you want your name to only be pronounced one way. Otherwise, if you're telling me about card and Vlad's telling me about cardio, I have no idea it's the same company.
Yeah. Confusion, right? Something to avoid, yeah. So what are some of the other things to avoid? I'm guessing that's where Scratch comes in.
Yeah, with Scratch, there's a lot of things. So you definitely, the S in Scratch stands for spelling challenge. That's a big one. I mean, with your own name, your personal name, like it's spelling challenge for people. And so, yeah, you don't want that with your brand name. Your name should not look like a typo. Your name does not look like a typo, by the way. But your brand name shouldn't look like a typo. Like, don't leave out letters that's another thing. People will leave out letters just to try to get a domain name. And all it's going to do is slow people down and have you have to spell it. You know, people's emails will get bounced back. They can't find your website. And when that happens, you're creating friction. And your name should be friction-free, frustration-free. So spell it the correct way. And if you need to add a modifier word to get a domain name, that's perfectly fine. Nobody expects anyone to have an exact match domain name anymore. So that's the S. And then the first C in Scratch stands for copycat. Nobody likes a copycat. We learned that in elementary school. So, you know, why be somebody else when you can be yourself? So the last thing you want when someone sees your name is for them to think, oh, they copied so-and-so, right? And I know, look, if you're not a creative person, it's hard not to just kind of resort to that. But then that's when you bring in the professional, right? or take my course or read my book. Yes, there's help out there. Help is available. So then the R in Scratch stands for restrictive, and that is where you outgrow your name. So it is, so maybe like we have here, diapers.com, they sell way more than diapers. 1-800-Flowers sells way more than flowers. And both of those businesses started out selling just one thing. But, oh, yeah, pens.com, they sell way more than pens. So it's, I think what happens a lot of times, companies start with one name and then they outgrow it. And that's why I have the R standing for restrictive. Canadian Tire in Canada, they sell way more than tires. They probably have 10,000 SKUs in their store. So but you wouldn't know that. And like, oh yeah, everyone in Canada knows by now, but what if they wanted to roll into the US? Like no one here would know that. So the A in Scratch stands for annoying, and annoying means that your name frustrates people, right? So it let's say your name has a number in the middle of it. So you are coast to coast, but it's spelled with a numeral two, then that's going to annoy people because first of all, they're going to type it in wrong, and then it's, you know, they're going to get the balance back, things like that. Or if you spell your name backwards, that, you know, like, oh, it's inbox spelled backwards. If you it's blank spelled backwards, unless it's Bob, people do not know how to intuitively spell things backwards, not quickly.
I love that example in the book when it came up, because I'd forgotten about it. I used to use it years and years ago. Yeah, and when it came up in the book, you probably don't know what Zobni is. And oh yeah, I remember that. It's inbox spelled backwards. So I remembered it.
What it was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But so many people never knew. So that's an example of an annoying name. And then the T in Scratch stands for tame. And you can't afford to be tame. I mean, not with, we're bombarded with so many words and images and all the social media and, you know, all the messages and the platforms, apps, right? You have to stand out. So don't be tame. Don't be pedestrian. You have to, you know, be bold, and don't be afraid to be bold. Those are the people that get noticed, right? And then the second C in Scratch stands for curse of knowledge. And that's a lot of engineers are guilty of this. It's where they know what the name means, but nobody else does. Or they forget that nobody, oftentimes they just forget because they have the curse of knowledge. They know what it means and they forget that nobody else does. So don't be too, like, you know, I guess a good way to think of it is if something is foreign, whether it's a foreign word or if it's just foreign to people, because like they're not familiar with that term. So yeah, don't be too clever. And then finally, the H in Scratch stands for hard to pronounce. And your name, like we talked about with card.io, your name should only be pronounced one way, intuitively pronounced. And you can't count on people pronouncing it the way you want them to pronounce it. Case in point, years ago, they may even still exist. It's a tech company called Nectar. Well, they wanted to be called Nectar, and they spelled it N-E-K-T-A-R. And I'm sure they paid a big branding firm to do that for them. And everybody called it Nectar.
Yeah.
Right? Nectar. So that's, you know, and there's so many companies where people pronounce the name completely wrong. And there's really not a lot you can do about it. I mean, funny about Zobni, which is inbox spelled backwards, for those of you who didn't catch that, X-O-B-N-I. So when Zobni first launched, they were pronounced Zobni. And then Bill Gates pronounced it Zobni. He pronounced it Zobni. So they changed the pronunciation from Zobni to Zobni because that's how he said it. Yeah. So that's Smile and Scratch.
Yeah, excellent. That's funny, Bill Gates one. All right. Now, thinking about, creative naming, what inspiration can come from all over the place? What's an experience you've had where you've been inspired by something completely unrelated to branding and kind of really inspired you to set up the whole name?
Okay, I have a good one for you there. So I grew up here in San Diego, and I didn't live here my whole life. I just lived here till I was 21 and moved away. I came back 6 years ago. And there was a very long span of time between that. And when I was going to school here, all the kids took Spanish in school, but I cheated my way through Spanish because all the kids, there was a lot of Hispanic kids at my school, and they all took Spanish because they could get an A+ because they already like me taking, first grader English, right? So they all did my homework for, not all of them, but a couple of the kids were really nice and they did my homework for me. So I never really learned anything. I don't know how to conjugate a verb. So when we got hired to name a Spanish language school in Cali, Colombia, I looked to my own experience of not learning Spanish, and I named it Gringo Lingo.
Love it.
Yeah, I love a good self-deprecating name.
Yeah. Yeah, I came across one recently that I thought was funny. That's right. I was coming back from the gym and there was a minivan went past on the main highway. And it said junk. And I haven't looked this up, so I don't even know what they do. But it said junk.com.au. And underneath that, it said a dirty four-letter word that ends in K. And I thought, oh, wow, that's kind of a bit edgy.
Oh, my gosh. I love how edgy Australia is. I mean, I went there many years ago. I got an Australian work visa. I don't know if I told you that story. I was an advertising copywriter. I got an Australian work visa. And then I got there and I realized, I don't understand all the colloquialisms of this language. So I just took the year off instead. But I could tell when I would see things how edgy. I knew that they were funny or edgy. I didn't exactly know why all the time. But I met a bunch of Australians when I worked at Ogilvy & Mather, the big ad agency, and they were hilarious. So you guys do great, great ads, great sense of humor. You're not all provincial like Americans can be sometimes.
Yeah, well, Australians are sort of generally very self-deprecating and capable of making fun of themselves.
It helps. People don't have to be that serious. I mean, we go to work and people think, we have to be serious. That's work. People want to have fun during the day. Why do you think people hate their jobs, right? You can give someone an opportunity to have fun, let them have fun. That's great. You saw that. You remembered the junk.au.com. You remembered a four-letter word that ends in K. No, see, now I remember it.
Yeah. I will have to go and check it out now that I've brought it up again. Yeah. All right. Now, one of the things, we touched on this trend of going with IO, and that sort of comes from the artificial intelligence craze. And I was doing something before where I thought, hang on, I can switch ChatGPT into this. And it was writing a process from a training video that I did. And I thought, well, ChatGPT can do that for me, which it did. It's quite amazing. So do you find ChatGPT and those kind of tools useful in generating ideas for naming? And assuming that you do, what's the smart way to go about it rather than just saying suggest some names?
Yeah, if you just say come up with names for whatever, my new family travel game company. It's not going to do a good job. You have to, here's where I found it to be really helpful. I was naming, it's helpful if you're looking for, you got to dig deeper, right? Just asking it to come up with names, that's not what I use it for. I use it, so an example is, I was, there was a company named Full Bloom Financial, and the woman serves Christian women. That's her target audience, Christian women. So she hired me to come up with taglines and a bunch of other things. And so I went to ChatGPT and I said, what are words that are common to both financial services and Christianity, right? So then I came up with it. ChatGPT gave me the word abundance. And I said, okay, come up with taglines with abundance. I didn't care for any of them. I came up with my own, which is live in abundance, which is really nice. And it works for both Christianity and financial services. And then I asked ChatGPT, come up with 800 numbers, you know, toll-free numbers. And it gave me a bunch of different combinations, and I didn't care for any of them, but I mixed and matched, and I came up with 800 Grow Joy. I asked for job titles. I asked I needed an info at, so I came up with something for that. So it's good for like more of like the little things, but if you already have a theme, this is what a name with legs, right? So like Grow Joy, Live in Abundance. So Full Bloom Financial has great legs because it lends itself to all that wordplay. But where ChatGPT kind of falls down is if you were trying, like the other day, so I named a famous bacon cheeseburger in the United States called the Wendy's Baconator. The Baconator has its own Wikipedia page. It was an answer in the New York Times crossword puzzle recently. It was an answer on Jeopardy, or, you know, big game show that people watch. So it's a famous name. And I asked ChatGPT the other day, come up with creative names for a bacon cheeseburger. And it just, it's weak, right? You know, bacon bliss, you know, like nothing really good. Or with the kids' travel game company I was naming, I came up with Tripopotamus, like hippopotamus, but Tripopotamus, Board Silly, like board game, but spelled like board game, Board Silly, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fun, Fee-Fi-Fo-Fam. ChatGPT can't do clever, and can't do funny either. The funny are like painful. They're like worse than the worst dad joke. I mean, it's beyond corny. It's like, oh my gosh. No, if you ever ask ChatGPT to like write a letter in a fun tone of voice, like it will be so ridiculously over the top. So it's not there. But if you said, help me. So if you were trying to name something like Jeff Bezos was naming Amazon, you know, and ChatGPT was around, he could say, what are metaphors for things that are big? That's where ChatGPT is, because I know all the places to get ideas, and metaphors are not something that you can look up easily. That takes a lot of work. I used to go to stock photo libraries to find metaphors for things just by typing in keywords. Like I could type in the word big. But with ChatGPT, it's great for metaphors. It's excellent with taglines. Not all the time, but sometimes I was naming a psychiatry practice that I named Blue Umbrella Psychiatry. And I asked it to come up with taglines, and it came up with helping you weather the storm. That's an excellent tagline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, once in a while it knocks it out of the park, but you know, I'm not quitting my day job yet, but what I have found it super helpful with though is when I helped that woman with Full Bloom Financial, I could have never done that. I did a 1-hour consulting call with her, and I could have never done that in the past, where I could have come up with all of those things so quickly. Yeah. But because of ChatGPT, I could just keep bouncing back and forth, and I was able to come up with a lot of things very quickly. But I also was working with a name that had a lot of legs to it. Mm. And like it, when your name lends itself to a theme, that's when you can really extend the mileage.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of really important points there. It's first of all, it's not going to replace, I mean, and this applies to other areas as well. I don't see it replacing people, but people who know how to use it in that way. So people who know how to have the conversation with it where you go back and say, no, I don't like any of that. Feed it some additional information and ask it the right questions, whether it's, you know, give me metaphors or give me similes for this or write a tagline based on all this information I've now given you. People who understand how they can extract the information out of it, that's where the benefits are going to lie. And like you say, I've found this as well, where it still required me to do something, but I've been able to do stuff in an hour that's taken me a day before.
Yeah. I mean, it's magic. It truly is.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. It's you know, it's the double-edged sword, though, right? Like, all of us white-collar professionals are a little scared of it. But at the same time, it's like, it's made me so much faster.
Mm. That's right. Mm. All right. Now, what about if you do have a name, and I probably am a little bit in this category, if you do have a name that perhaps doesn't fit all the smile criteria and perhaps I've outgrown it a little bit in the sense of my business has transitioned a little bit, how do you propose to go about rebranding in a way that's not all of a sudden, oh, what's happened to those people and who are these people? That there's some connection, but at the same time, now there's a really strong brand that meets all your smile criteria.
Yeah, I think like it's never too late to change your name. We have now changed two company names that were both more than 100 years old. I think a lateral move is good if you can keep something similar to your name, but maybe like we were naming this company, it was a physical therapy that you did on your Xbox? What's the thing? Yeah. No, PlayStation.
Yeah. PlayStation. Okay, yeah.
And the company was named Respond Design, but it shared the D. So it looked like Respond Design. And we renamed it, rebranded it, Respond Well, because it was two separate words, Respond Well. Well, it had to do with getting well, right? And it was this well of all of these different physical therapy exercises that people could do. So that name worked well. So that was a nice lateral move. But then sometimes people just, or we renamed this bank that was more than 100 years old. It was named First National Bank of Syracuse. And Syracuse is a relatively largest city in New York State. But the bank was not in New York State. It was in the middle of the country in a flyover state, Kansas. And Syracuse was a tiny little town in Kansas, and it was an award-winning regional bank. They had a number of locations, but it sounded like a New York bank. So they wanted a name that was more true to them. They helped fund a lot of farming equipment, farms, ranchers. So it was all about, they were all about helping people's dreams come true. So we took the name First National Bank of Syracuse. We kept the first and we made it Dream First. So a much more aspirational name. But, and again, it's, you know, a little, you know, somewhat of a departure, but we kept the word first. So if you can do something like that, that's great. But if not, and you just need to change the name, look, you can keep some things the same. I mean, keep the same color. Maybe, you know, you're going to have a new logo, but maybe, you know, have something that feels familiar. And then when you do change, you can do that website redirect. So you are having, you're not losing customers that might be going to the old site. They're going to automatically go to the new site. You know, you're announcing the name change in email, social media, you know, all of that. So it's much easier for people to find you than it was in the old days, where if you just change your name, you would hope people could find you. Now people can find you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, there's lots of good tips there. And it's really helpful. So what's your favorite brand name?
Oh, my favorite brand name. I'm so glad I have an answer to this. My favorite brand name is for a bike pump, and it's named Joe Blow.
Yeah, that's I think that's mentioned in the book.
It is. In the Ask Me Anything section. Yeah, it is. I also love the name Kryptonite for the bike lock company. That's such a great name too.
Yeah, well, Kryptonite, I actually have some Kryptonite locks. So.
Oh, do you really?
That's so cool.
Okay, yeah, so then you know all the, then you, and bike companies have terrific names. And I think in the book, I even have, in the book, I think I list 10 great bike company names.
Hmm.
Like one that I love, it's a helmet, and the company's called Nutcase. Right? Like it's a case for your nut.
Yeah.
I just think bike companies, out of all of the different brands, manufacturers out there, I always see the best ones from bike companies.
Yeah, I guess they kind of want to have fun with their products. And the other thing, I don't know whether you think this helps if people are actually users of their own products. And a lot of that, what I see anyway, a lot of the smaller bike companies, they're people who are keen cyclists or mountain bikers or whatever branch of the sport they're in, and they decide that whatever it is that they decide to build a business on, that what they need isn't available, so they create their own and then they turn it into a business.
I love that.
It's sort of, it's a lot of fun around that.
Yeah, they don't take themselves too seriously. Yeah, but every industry could learn from the bike industry.
Hmm. Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Alexandra. I think it's a good point now, and we'll leave some of the conversation for people to actually check out your book and check out your website. But it's a good point now, I think, to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same five questions I ask of every guest. And the idea is you'll give some really snappy, insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today. You all set?
Okay. Bring it on.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Surround yourself with a color.
With a color?
With colors, just colors everywhere. Colors will make you, colors will electrify your brain.
Hmm. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's kind of like when you go outside and it's a gray overcast sky. It feels a bit depressive.
That's exactly it. Bright sunshine and flowers. Yes, that's exactly it. We had gray here in San Diego for the last week, and then the sun came out, and it's like, yeah, it just brightens everything up. It makes people feel better. And if you, people work in these gray offices, like I have toys all over my office and just color. I have a pink microphone.
I love it.
Color makes people happy.
Hmm. Yeah.
And creative.
Like my yellow
headset. I love your yellow headphones.
Excellent. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Oh, just travel. Travel the world. I've been to 50 countries and I've seen all kinds of creative things, and that's what keeps me creative.
Yeah, traveling's so wonderful, isn't it? And you do need to kind of have an open mind and be curious, because I think there's a lot of times, sometimes I feel like I'm so annoying because I'm somewhere with my wife and we're traveling. I say, oh, how did they do that? Or why do they do that different? Or wonder what's behind that?
Yes, and you see things that you would never see in your own country. And you also realize, hey, my country's cool, but other countries are doing things better than we are in a lot of different ways. And yeah, I love looking at modern technology. And yeah, I mean, even trains, you know, just look at trains in different countries. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, Japan or South Korea are the places to go for great trains. Although China, the big cities in China have got some pretty impressive trains as well these days.
Yeah, I saw a train station in Russia with a chandelier.
Oh, right. Yeah. I haven't been to Russia yet.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't been. I saw it on TV. No, I have not been.
Oh, okay.
One of the few places I haven't been.
Yeah. Yeah, 50 countries. There's probably a few more to go.
All
right. Now, what's a favorite resource you use most often?
Oh, okay. I use, well, other than ChatGPT, I use a rhyming dictionary constantly. And Rhyme Zone, just like it sounds, is it has rhymes, it has related words, it has sound-alike words, and like, people like things that are lyrical. So think of the name like GoPro for the camera. People, so rhyming, just poke around in one. You'd be surprised what's there.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I've actually used ChatGPT for that, getting rhyming or doing alliterations. It doesn't do a bad job if you give it the initial input and say, give me some alliterations or rhymes around that.
Yeah, it's great for alliteration. Because, and this is like where I used to, for alliteration, I would go to Scrabble dictionaries. And I would like go, you know, one to the two syllable, three syllable, four syllable. And now you can just sort it and you can say, give me 100 words that start with C that are two syllables or less and rank them in order of how common they are. But these are all things that I've learned. I know how to do these prompts because I know all the tools that I've been using that are out there, but I still have my favorite tools. I do. And I'll say this about ChatGPT. Sometimes it's too fast and it takes away the fun. Like, I like going on. One of the things I love what I do is going on that treasure hunt, right? Like, I'm looking for the idea. And with ChatGPT, it's so fast, it takes the pleasure away from it. And I like the fun of looking, but I understand not everybody does. They just want to like hurry up and be done.
And sometimes on that treasure hunt, you might go off on a tangent that leads to a better result, right?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I love going down the rabbit holes. Absolutely.
Excellent. All right. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
On track. Well, other than like with a whip, I think just here's truly what I think. Do not divert from your process. I've had my company for 19 years. It will be, next week is our 19th anniversary week. And if you start veering from your process and let your clients go off track, which is essentially what they're doing, it will taint your process and things won't work. So you have to keep reeling them in and taking them back and saying, this is how we do it here. This is a way, you know, we've proven it's done this way. It may not make a lot of sense to you, but, and then also lay down your rules, man. Like, I have this rule when I'm reviewing names with a client and people are shocked that I do this, but I do. I'm like, no negative comments. It's not going to help. It will absolutely not help get to the end result. I only want to know what's working. Don't tell me what's not working. We only need one name. So if people like, they're like, yes, ma'am, Alexandra. but if you can just live by your rules and don't divert from them.
Yeah, that's a great, great philosophy to live by. And I know with our processes, there are times when I've said to potential clients who say, well, we don't work that way, or often it's, in fact, with the podcast, often people have said, well, here's my, so I give people a calendar to book a time, and I've had people come back and say, well, here's my calendar, you want me on the podcast, you book a time, and by the way, I'm not going to send you all the information you've requested because you can find it on my website.
That's so rude.
So I've got a standard response now. I've developed the standard response. I go back and I say, thank you for your interest. If you don't respect my process, you're not a good fit for the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. No, and that's what it comes down to, respecting the process, right? No, and you do it your way because it works for you. And like, I know, like, if I send someone a podcast one sheet, but they still have a form for me to fill out, I'm going to fill out the form because that's how they prefer to get the information, and that's fine.
Yeah. So respecting the process and making sure you follow that. Because if, as soon as you abandon your own process, you're kind of
and
going off track yourself, right?
Yeah. Oh, can you just do, we only want 5 names. We don't need 100. We just want 5. And I'm like, but in order to give you 5, we need to come up with 100, and you're not going to see things that would lead to other ideas, or like, No, but we need all the names trademark screened. And it's like, that's not our process. We don't do that in the first round, you know? So yeah, and sometimes we don't get the jobs, but that's okay. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone could do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, I believe have a unique name or a moniker. So if your company already has a name, but you, let's say you're an attorney, I'll give you an example. You're an attorney and you already, you know, your firm, let's say your firm is named after yourself. You can still distinguish yourself and differentiate yourself with what I call a moniker. So that is example. There's a woman named Lauren Vasquez who is a attorney. She specializes in cannabis and she calls herself the fired up attorney. And that's how, because look, you're meeting people at a conference, maybe in like, oh, what was that woman's name? You know, like you tell me, I'm looking for a cannabis attorney. And if I can't remember her name, I can remember the fired up attorney. Yeah. So give people something that makes you easy to remember. Like, and another tip here is have a domain name that's easy for people to remember. There's a speaker I know named Patrick. I can never remember his last name. No one can remember it or pronounce it or spell it, but his URL is bookpatrick.com. That's easy for meeting planners to remember.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen quite a few people do that trick of book and then their first name or something. And yeah. And that's right. Yeah. So it's very easy to remember that and you don't even have to remember their names.
Yeah. Or I know this guy named Craig and his email is Craig, not Greg. @gmail, right? I have this woman that works for me named Jamie and she spells it J-A-I-M-E. So her email, I made her email Jamie, not Jamie, you know, spelling it the right way, not the wrong way. And that is going to help people remember. Anything you can do to help people remember you, help them.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz. That's been great. Now, where can people find out more about what you do, get a hold of your book, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Oh, well, you can follow me on LinkedIn at Alexandra Watkins. My website is eatmywords.com. You can take the Smile and Scratch test there for free. There's an interactive test. The book, Hello, My Name is Awesome, it's available on Amazon. And if you follow me on, if you read the book, review it, and I'm giving away prizes all March long. We're giving away $19,000 in naming services, courses, books, products, brainstorming with me all March or at the end of March. But you can enter anytime in March. If you follow me on Instagram, that's a free entry. So our Instagram is Eat My Words Names with an S on the end. And there will be information on our website about the contest.
Excellent. All right. And we'll, of course, as always, include links to all of those in the show notes so people can click straight through. So that's wonderful. So there's some really great prizes there. Just for listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
So as we wrap it up, Alexandra, what action would you like our listener to take away from today's conversation?
Be bold, don't settle for something that's regular. And no matter what you do, just be creative. If you have a challenge, find a creative solution for it. Don't give up. Don't take the easy way out. Take the creative way out. Not out. Take the creative way in.
In, yeah, I love it. Great. Well, it's a wonderful call to action. And thanks so much for joining us today, sharing your passion for naming and sharing those insights with us so generously. I've really enjoyed the conversation and all the best and please do stay in touch.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community. where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.